Svetlana bustled about and balled up my gun and my shoes and my clothes into a tidy bundle and threw it behind the kitchen counter. She followed it with the two hard chairs. She picked up my phone and shut it off and tossed it away. She was clearing the space. She was emptying it. The living room part of the studio was about 20 feet by 12. I was backed up against the center of one of the long walls. Lila tracked around in front of me, keeping her distance, pointing the gun. She stopped in the far corner by the window. Now she was facing me at a shallow angle. Svetlana went into the kitchen. I heard a drawer rattle open, heard it close, saw Svetlana come back with two knives. They were long butcher's tools for gutting or filleting or boning. They had black handles, steel blades, wicked, wafer-thin cutting edges. Svetlana threw one of them to Lila. She caught it expertly by the handle with her free hand. Svetlana moved to the corner opposite her. They had me triangulated. Lila was 45 degrees to my left, Svetlana was 45 degrees to my right. Lila twisted her upper body and jammed the P-220 silencer hard into the angle where the front wall met the side. She found the catch at the heel of the butt with her thumb and dropped the magazine. It fell out and hit the floor in the corner of the room. Three rounds showed in the slot, therefore one was still chambered. She threw the gun itself into the other corner, behind Svetlana. The gun and the magazine were now 20 feet apart, one behind one woman and the other behind the other.
"Like a treasure hunt," Lila said. "The gun won't fire without the magazine in place, to prevent an accidental discharge if a round is mistakenly left in the chamber. The Swiss are very cautious people. So you need to pick up the gun and then pick up the magazine, or vice versa. But first, of course, you need to get past us."
I said nothing.
She said, "If you should succeed in a mad, wounded scramble, then I recommend you use the first round on yourself."
And then she smiled and stepped forward a pace. Svetlana did the same. They held their knives low, fingers below the handle, thumbs above, like street fighters, like experts. The long blades winked in the light. I stood still. Lila said,
"We're going to enjoy this more than you could possibly imagine."
I did nothing. Lila said,
"A delay is good. It heightens the anticipation."
I stood still. Lila said,
"But if we get bored waiting, we'll come and get you."
I said nothing, stood still. Then I reached behind me and came out with my Benchmade 3300 from where it had been duct-taped to the small of my back. Chapter 83. I thumbed the release and the blade snapped out with a sound that was halfway between a click and a thump, a loud sound in the silent room, and an unhappy sound. I don't like knives. I never have. I have no real talent with them. But I have as much of an instinct for self-preservation as any guy, maybe more than most. And by that point, I had been scuffling since the age of 5, and all of my defeats had been minor. And I'm the kind of guy who watches and learns. I had seen knife fights all over the world, the Far East, Europe, the hardscrabble scrublands outside army bases in the southern United States, in streets, in alleys, outside bars and pool halls. First rule, don't get cut early. Nothing weakens you faster than blood loss. Svetlana was more than a foot shorter than me, and she was thick and wide, and her arms were proportional. Lila was taller, more loose-limbed, more graceful, but all in all I figured that even against blades 6 inches longer than mine, I still had the advantage. Plus, I had just changed the game, and they were still dealing with the surprise. Plus, they were fighting for fun, and I was fighting for my life. I wanted to get to the kitchen, so I danced towards Svetlana, who was between me and it. She was up on her toes, knife down at her knees, feinting left, feinting right. I kept my blade down low to match hers. She swung, I arched back, her blade hissed past my thigh. I jammed my ass back and my shoulders forward and clubbed her with an overarm left hook. It grazed her eyebrow and then caught her full on the side of the nose. She looked astonished. Like most knife fighters, she thought it was all about the steel. She forgot that people have two hands. She rocked back on her heels, and Lila came in from my left, blade low, darting, jabbing, mouth open in an ugly grimace, concentrating hard. She understood. This was no longer a game, no longer fun. She ducked in, she ducked out, feinting, backing off, always working. For a time we all danced like that. Frantic, breathless, abrupt, abbreviated movements, dust and sweat and fear in the air, their eyes locked on my blade, mine switching constantly between theirs. Svetlana stepped in, stepped out. Lila came at me, balanced up on her toes. I kept my hips back and my shoulders forward. I swung my blade hard for Lila's face, huge, convulsive, like I was aiming to throw a ball 400 feet. Lila ducked back. She knew the swing was going to miss because she was going to make it miss. Svetlana knew it was going to miss because she trusted Lila. I knew it was going to miss because I planned not to let it hit. I stopped the violent maneuver halfway through in reverse direction and aimed a vicious surprise backhand straight at Svetlana. I sliced her forehead, a solid blow. I felt the blade hit bone. A lock of her hair hit her chest. The benchmade worked exactly the way it should. D2 steel. You could have dropped a $10 bill on it and gotten 2 fives in exchange. I put a 6-inch horizontal gash halfway between Svetlana's hairline and her eyebrows, open to the bone. She rocked back and stood still. No pain. Not yet. Forehead cuts are never fatal, but they bleed a lot. Within seconds, blood was sheeting down into her eyes, blinding her. If I had been wearing shoes, I could have killed her there and then, bring her down with a blow to the knees and then kick her head to pulp. But I wasn't about to risk the bones in my feet against her fire-plugged body. Lack of mobility would have killed me just as fast. I danced back. Lila came straight after me. I kept my hips back and dodged the hissing arc of her blade. Left, right, I hit the wall behind me. I timed it and waited until her arm was across her body and turned sideways and shoulder-charged her and bounced her away. I spun onward to where Svetlana was tottering around and trying to wipe the pouring blood from her eyes. I swatted her knife arm away and stepped in and nicked her neck above her collarbone and dodged back out. Then Lila cut me. She had figured out the reach issue. She was holding her knife in her fingertips, way at the end of the handle. She lunged in. Her hair was flying. Her shoulders were hunched forward. She was looking for every half inch of advantage she could get. She stopped on a stiff front leg and bent low and leaned in and slashed wildly at my stomach and hit it. A bad cut. A wild swing, a strong arm, a razor-sharp blade. Very bad. It was a long diagonal slice below my navel and above the waistband of my boxers. No pain. Not yet. Just a brief, strange signal from my skin telling me it was no longer all connected together.